Restless feeling by my side. Early dawning Sunday morning. It's just the wasted years so close behind. Watch out, the world's behind you. There's always someone around you who will call. It's nothing at all. Sunday morning, and I'm falling. I've got a feeling I don't want to know. Restless feeling by my side. Early dawning Sunday morning. It's just the wasted years so close behind. Watch out, the world's behind you. There's always someone around you who will call. It's nothing at all. Sunday morning, and I'm falling. I've got a feeling I don't want to know.
Good evening. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, and welcome to Ebony Spectrum. We have several things here for you today, so stay with us and listen to the latest news we have.
Welcome home, everybody. This is Native Land Pod. I'm your host, Angela Rye, with our other hosts, Andrew Gillum and Tiffany Cross.
Hey, sis.
And, hey, so we have a little mess from the DNC that we're going to talk about. This is an after dark.
Called NLP Uncut.
So no names,
These
right?
are our
no names. No names. I don't want to say anybody's name.
No names.
These clown tasers for love. No nothing shine. More for us to say
These
than names.
Clowns. Okay. So
I think we should start chronologically.
That
okay,
is
yes.
Just a wild
I love it,
week.
Tip. Now you have the floor.
Let's okay. Go. I'm going to tell a story. This wasn't any of us, but I'm
He's
just telling the story of something
must
I saw.
Be told.
Exactly.
What had happened was...
Whole thing.
What had happened was we were in line going through security, and this was somebody in front of us that had something in their bag. So I do want to point out that in Illinois, marijuana is legal. You can possess marijuana.
Yeah,
you're not breaking the law.
Not a federal event.
Well, federally, unfortunately, marijuana is still listed as a Schedule I drug and considered illegal, which puts a lot of local municipalities at odds with the federal government, a lot of airports at odds. So really, that is just a policy that I think needs to change. Not even for people who use it, but for people who are impacted by it. It's an unnecessary thing for people to have to go through. Anyway, so I don't know the rules. Perhaps my lawyer who is present with me can weigh in. If you are on federal property, which I think the United Center was, where everything was happening at the DNC, does it then become illegal? I don't know.
Yes.
If the TSA finds it in your bag.
Secret Service.
At an airport. But I'm saying at the airport, it's the TSA. They are a federal organization, even
That's
though
right.
the state, you know, if you're traveling to another state
right.
where it's legal from a state, I don't know all those rules.
Yeah,
we weren't trying to find out. So somebody in front of us had something in their bag. And so normally they're not looking for weed.
Allegedly. That's what they started yelling at.
Yeah, but
right.
the magnetometers are looking for like magnet. They're not looking.
Like,
they're looking
right.
for certain material,
weapons,
magnetic
precisely.
Material.
So when this person in front of us, when their bag was flagged, one of the officers pulled out and said, "What is this?" And you could see that it was a J in a little tube.
A J for the people at home
who
that don't
smoke.
Know what that is. It was a joint in a clear glass container.
Well, it had to have something magnetic on. The top.
Well, it had a top on. And, you know, when the officer said, "What is this?" I immediately thought, oh, I bet that person, one, probably didn't know they had it in their bag. And two, probably didn't know that the top was metal.
Because
otherwise it would have gone through. You could have thought that was lipstick.
Yeah,
it would have gone through with no problem.
Yeah.
I don't know
anyway,
why they had to be right in front of us. But
it
was
crazy. I felt
scared
bad
for them.
It was so crazy. I felt bad
but
for them too.
They handled. They were like, "Look, that ain't mine."
But we don't know. We wanted to make sure that we were clear that it was not ours.
I know, but they're like, that ain't
but
mine.
But what I love is how everybody kept a steady hand. Nobody was like, "What? Oh my God!" You know,
well,
everybody
because
was
we
like,
were talking
"I
to them." We felt like we, you know,
like
we were like
scary.
With them. So we're like, "That ain't his. That I don't know where that came from." And I was like,
totally.
"I didn't see it. I don't know." And the dude
totally.
Was like, "Look, it was the external pocket. I don't know how they got there."
Okay,
well,
so now let's move along. So here's the other thing that happened shortly thereafter.
That's so rude.
Is Andrew,
I just
want to
say I'm happy it was all good.
Yes, me too. Andrew, after that, was telling us because Tiff saw Omarosa. Oh, that was the only name I mentioned. Sorry, I didn't say her name.
Andrew needs to apologize.
Yeah, he does need to apologize because Tiff saw her and then we said some things because
during
we didn't know why
show.
She was there. Like, why
she was taking
she
pictures
go to the RNC?
During the live
of
show.
Of our show.
Yeah,
it's interesting. So, Andrew,
well,
do you want to apologize to us yet?
So let me give some perspective here. You know, we were closing out the show on one of these days, Tuesday, I think.
I
think it was Tuesday.
It was Monday.
Whenever you came over and sat next to us.
She came over because there wasn't another co-host. It was Tuesday. That was the only night that it was just the three of us. Monday.
No, this was after.
No, I came over at the end.
That's right.
Oh, we had no guest host. Because Bakari was over Tuesday. There. You're oh, right. Tuesday. It's Tuesday. You're right. Okay.
Thank
you're
you
right.
again. Okay. I appreciate that. And I appreciate that
on
my part.
You see, I said sorry. Did you hear I said you're right?
Apologies, Andrew.
When you are dead wrong.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. We apologize.
So I agree. We all agree. When you're dead wrong, you apologize. So then,
okay, so you're dead wrong.
We're asked by our host friend Angela to offer some reflections about the day, and we're all high on that. And then, you know, as happens sometimes, I was speaking and giving my reflections on the experience, and I look over and I see they're hitting each other like each other's shoulder. I'm like,
I didn't hit.
Yeah, y'all were doing this tag team.
I did not hit you.
And then look at the video, y'all, because it's indisputable. And then what happens is I say, what's going on now? Like, name such person is taking pictures of us. Such person who worked for the White House.
Who is that?
Who's he doing?
I'm trying to figure out what impression this is. You know, we're in our show. So they're like, I'm sorry, they come back to the show.
Nasty guy.
Few moments later, not very many moments later, it's again. You see her? See her? And I'm like, what is going on? I said, you know what?
We saw another person?
Maybe y'all, no, the same person, except it's a new experience for you. So, you know, we got to interrupt again the show. And so I said,
that is not
maybe
true.
Y'all
it was in the same
envious
instant.
Of her. And you were like, what?
Tell me, why would you think that ever in you. Your life?
Because I don't ever recall seeing you all pay attention to anybody.
Why was she taking
somebody who was tap dancing for like. Trump? Is tap dance in front of you and taking pictures of you, pictures you might feel
people
away.
People took pictures of us the whole time.
No,
there.
But why her?
I trust them. I don't trust her.
I agree. Where is so,
she's still an op, as far as I'm concerned. She's still an op.
The feds. The feds.
Look, this is without regard to whomever.
Speaking of the feds, what about I got followed in the elevator?
Oh, then there
Let's
that.
Get to that. Let's get to that. That's what I want to talk
so
about.
So I got
this
followed in the elevator.
This is what you don't want to do, people.
Yeah. So number one, I think that we learned that we feel real pedestrian, but we're not real pedestrian. And Andrew's wife has told her, it's like, y'all be moving like you not who you are.
We need to follow. We need to go with each other.
Yeah, we definitely need to go in groups.
That's the rules.
Go in groups. Always go in groups.
Because I went on the elevator by myself, allegedly, but I was on the phone talking to my manager and another guy got on the elevator and he was like, you've been calling me crazy in DC for 10 years. And I was like, what?
Who are you?
Who are you? And he said his name, which shall not be repeated. I actually don't remember his name again, sadly.
I got it.
You only got the first name.
No, I got both. I know the deal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you searched it. Okay. So anyway, this man works in a financial services company. He's a minister at my friend's church, come to find out. But I haven't been there in some time, so I don't know him. And it was just a whole mess. And he was, you've been calling me DC, crazy in DC for 10 years. Call me the B word, get off the elevator.
I think it's important to say this.
You don't know.
Because let me just say, as a woman on an elevator with a man who is speaking to you aggressively, because I don't want to make light of this, a man who is speaking to you aggressively, Angela had already hit her floor. Because I was like, why would you like get off on your floor? She had already hit it. He came on after her. And
but if he
would have
got off, I would have got back on another elevator.
Yes. But he's speaking to her aggressively. And then when she's getting off the elevator, he says, bitch. Now imagine as a woman, it's 1:30 in the morning.
Yes.
You by yourself on this elevator. It's not very populated in the halls. Some crazy person's on here talking crazy to you and you getting off the elevator. You don't know if they about to get off with you. And they say, bitch.
That's all bad.
That's a problem. So Angela tells us this story the next day. And Andrew's like, who is this dude? Like, we going to Google him. We going to look him up to see who he is.
We were going to do something else, but we, on the process.
But first, we had to know who he was and what he looked like.
We were just going to report him. We weren't going to do anything threatening. But
I was
going
to do something.
No, it just, this is a recording. We are not going to do anything.
I'm not saying I was going to cause physical violence, but I was going to do more than just report him.
Well, he has been reported and hopefully his pastors talked to him and he's figured it out. But we did see him on the convention floor night.
I asked Angela to point him out when you see him. This was the night that the black woman accepted
her nomination. But I think we were already feeling froggy.
We were all feeling very high.
Feeling froggy. Not high.
High on the moment.
Yeah.
But it was packed. on
it
that
was
floor.
Packed and it couldn't was move. High tension because you couldn't move and it was stressful and I was watching people and all these germs.
I was having a panic attack.
Me right. too.
Like you, literally somebody would be like this on you.
Look, y'all should have followed Charlamagne's move. Charlamagne and I were standing next to each other. I look one way. Next thing I know, I look back. He's standing next to me.
On a platform.
This dude had then got up on a bleacher or something.
But no, the thing is, the guy was there and he still had the crazy eyes. The funny thing is, how are you going to confront somebody crazily in an elevator at a crazy time to say, you called me crazy for 10 years who I never know you, you crazy for saying it, but you actually sound crazy doing it? That's interesting too, but I digress. The point is, we saw crazy eyes on the floor and crazy eyes, when I saw him, I said, Tiff, that's him. And then Tiff said,
watch your...
It's go time, girls. I told y'all I've been ready. And Peaches and Herb came out.
No, they didn't.
And I walked up to him. But okay, I'm being silly. But this is the truth of it.
This part is true.
I take offense that a man would put a woman in that position. And yes. I do want people to know you were not just talking to Angela. You talking to me too. You talking to Andrew. You talking to anybody who rocks with us.
And at this point, I'm already in the alleyway.
Andrew is like, first of all, at this point, we have gotten on Andrew's last nerve about 10 times a day. So Andrew is with us, but he like, I need five feet away from y'all right
he
now.
He needed 500 feet apparently. Yes. He's gone, gone.
So I walked up to the guy on the floor because I wanted him to know it was not okay. And I said, you better watch your mouth. And he said, you don't know me. And I said, you better watch your mouth. And so Lolo was with us and Lolo is like, you know, let's go. So we're moving. But I wanted him to know. I'm like, I wish he would. So he's behind us. He's like, he's right behind us.
Balloons are dropping.
She did what she does when she comes in.
Lolo was pushing us. That was necessary. You would have done the same thing. I wanted you to know. I'm froggy. You was feeling froggy on the elevator. Now we all feeling froggy. So now what?
We just leaped into the nomination.
He was the name he called Angela because he knew better. So this is, we not 5 seconds off this incident. Okay.
Yes, and then
we walking off the floor and then Angela is taking a picture with somebody.
Yes. I just saw he's still a friend who I worked on Capitol Hill with, Daryl Doss. I will name check him. I love you, Daryl. I'm sorry. We had a little, we were trying to get our selfie and there was a fraud that was trying to, like, he just was in the picture. And it's like, can you please get out of our picture? Like,
someone who has publicly harassed us, who's been saying ugly things about us, and someone who is has done and said fraudulent things with people we know. Is that fair to say,
resources, lawyer? Yeah, to get resources from, extract resources from the organizations that help to fight against the thing that we talked about on our most recent podcast, voter fraud, alleged voter fraud intimidation, voter suppression, or voting rights, protecting voting rights all across the South. Organizations that do that work, this individual has taken money out of their hands to do whatever it is they want to do. I'm not naming him on purpose.
Well, suffice it to say, you didn't want to be in the picture with that person.
Right. No, I didn't want him photobombing me. So I just was like, can we wait a second? I don't take pictures with thieves in them. And then he didn't move. And I was like, this person took money from my friend. And then he was like,
What'd you say?
So then I was like,
I ain't say no names.
I said, give my friend her money back. I named her. And then he was like, no, we got to have a conversation. And then Tiff says,
We're being escorted off the floor. And again, he is aggressively pursuing Angela.
They were
so I held my hand out. And if you're listening, bleep me or mute this part. But I said, no, you ain't got shit to say to Angela. Get the F away from us. And he is trying to push past me to get to Angela in a very aggressive way that made me uncomfortable. So I continued to yell. I don't know what I said at that point, but we were with Leonard.
She's been carried away in somebody's arms and she's still...
Nobody's doing
that. Carried away,
but just on
this
part,
person was aggressively pursuing Angela,
and I was yelling, "You're a fraud! You're a effing fraud!" Which is the truth. But also, I'll just say, you know, thank God that Leonard's security was there to make sure that it didn't get any worse. He prevented the man from doing anything further. Leonard is a little bit taller than me, but he's very protective of all of us and wanted to make sure that this man was understanding that there was no conversation to be had with any women. And so did the security who
asked, why are you aggressively going after women that way? Do not aggressively approach these women. And he did not listen. So, and then at this point, it's a melee guy. Like, there are people around us. It's a whole crowd.
It looks crazy. And then I'm feeling bad because there's literally, we're robbing people of this really historic moment. And it's like, for what? And I think part of it for me was like, there were people, even like, you know, Blue Vest walked up during our podcast. And, you know, you have been like going above and beyond to try to get folks to not pay attention to this very important case, trying to ensure that Marilyn Mosby gets pardoned over a case that sure, I disagree with the outcome of the case. I wish that prosecutorial office didn't follow that. But that wasn't Marilyn's work. You know, and for you to go above and beyond, you're allegedly a justice reform advocate. But my only point is, I got suspended in the seventh grade. And it was because I'm making a point. I got suspended in the seventh grade and it was for fighting a fight that wasn't mine. I am far more protective of the people in my life than I am for myself. It's probably something I need to work on in therapy. But I will just say, I don't want to be at something as historic as the DNC and there's beefs popping up all around. Most of them were not ours. Most of them were not ours. But I do think that people need to be accountable for the things they say, especially when they're engaging in dangerous, toxic rhetoric and engaging in dirty, nasty work behavior. And I think those are the things that we're confronting. When I look back at what happened, I'm not pleased at how I engaged with these folks. I think it could be done in better ways. But like, also, there are some people I don't want to have a sit down conversation with because I don't think that you are mindful enough about your actions to care. I think some people are attention hoes, you know, like they're going to do what they need to do to get attention. And I don't want to engage with you because you're, yeah, that's a nice way to put it, Tiff. You know, I don't want to engage with you because there's no sincerity in what you're doing. You're just going to do what you think is going to go viral. And that's why it's funny, Blue Vest, because your little tweets didn't get no traction.
But to me, whatever the reasoning behind it was is irrelevant to me. Whatever reason this person on the elevator had, whatever reason this person on the floor had in pursuing you, whatever reason, you know, somebody taking pictures of, whatever it is, if you are making me uncomfortable, if I can't go like this without touching you, you are infringing on my right to exist. And it makes me feel uncomfortable. More so, it makes me feel in danger. So again, to a PSA, do not put anyone in that position. And also, look, I think we're all intelligent people, you know, with intellectual curiosity here. And that is how we show up. That is who we are for the most part. Yeah. But like many in our community, there is another side. And we, you know, we work to check ourselves and, you know, to sit across from people we disagree with and still maintain a collegial atmosphere. Once you cross a certain line, well, now we're just two people with a problem with each other and you're infringing on my right to exist. You don't want to put yourself or any of us in that situation. We are living in crazy times where people are absolutely batshit crazy out here. Don't conduct yourself that way. Yeah. Don't put yourself or us in harm's way or make anybody feel uncomfortable.
Or you're in conflict with me and I'm not aware.
Right. And
we're not aware of
you really
each other.
You with yourself.
And then now you come, we got beef, we got tension. We don't have any of that because we don't know each other.
We don't even know each other.
I promise I don't know who said what to me 2 years ago on social media. Like, we're not looking at things like that.
Let me confess, I don't read comments. I ain't seen them. I don't know what you thought about
Andrew
me.
Andrew really doesn't.
It was very interesting to then later learn about this other dude, last dude we talking about, then went on and trashed us, all three of us.
Before the thing even happened, how are you on call? We didn't even know. But y'all, I walked you to the hotel
the day we checked in, and this very person embraces me, and I embrace him in a full fledged hug.
You're lying. The same day that he tweeted,
the same day the insult is hurled, and I would never have known.
Wow.
No, it's all good. I mean, please, it is what it is. I felt worse about what happened because by the time y'all get to me, I'm in the tunnel. I got earplugs in. I'm listening to music, waving to people as they go by. I see them coming my way, but I see something has gone down because I see the security guard is a little, amped up.
Agitated.
I say, Tiff, what's up? You're like, nothing. Everything is great. What a night. Da, da, da. I was like,
because I knew we were on your nerves, Andrew. I'm like, let's just get out of here.
It was all good.
And security
but
was
right
telling
to
us
just get out of here. He said, don't say anything else. And
I think me and Angela got in trouble when we got in the car. He's like, don't say anything, lady. Just keep walking.
And I missed all the deck. I had my earplugs in and went to sleep. So I learn about it the next morning. And then at this point, it's like, oh, man. You know, but all that to say to some of that, one, it was a overwhelmingly great event. Two, it was great connecting with a whole bunch of people. The downside, and I think some of this, y'all, is we are really good, decent people who try to create a family atmosphere with everyone that we come into contact with, and especially y'all who are our listeners and supporters and friends and that kind of thing, to the point where, you know, beefs can be had. You might be mad at me for something I said on the show or something, and I don't even know. We don't know. And so this tension gets brought into a situation and it escalates, and it's so unnecessary. And Angela and Tiff, you said, you know, I wouldn't have conducted myself. Listen, sometimes people put you in situations that we don't like to be in, and you're going to do what it takes as a human, and your survival instincts kick in to do what's required. That's what it is.
We welcome disagreement. We do not invite confrontation in a negative way. You see me out and you want to tell me disagree, no problem. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, and I prefer it in an email.
I don't want you to email me about that.
Don't email me, but you can come up to me and tell me you disagree, but that's fine. If it's respectful,
it's unnecessary.
I don't mind. I think if that could just offer a best practice for myself, I'm not putting this on y'all. I think that if I could go back, what I would have done is to try to tamp it down a bit. Like, I think that my feelings were justified, but my feelings did not have to come out enraged the way they did. And I think that there are some things that just don't deserve attention, like me yelling about Blue Vest on a stage. What did that really resolve? Like, sure, we might have exposed some things, but what's really the point? Telling a dude he's a fraud. Clearly, he knew he was a fraud because I never said his name, but he was the only person out of that huge group that responded.
We'll
always holler. And so that's the thing. I think that I specialize in calling out, and I would like to be better about calling up. It's just not necessary. And so the thing I want to work on is my, like, filtering out, like, okay, here's how I'm feeling. How can I resolve those feelings so that I can have an uplifting conversation, if at all, with people? And then to Tiff's point, one of the things that she's saying to me often, and I'm trying to put it into practice every day, is like, is this person telling me this because they want me to resolve it? Or do they need an issue spotter? Do they need a strategist? Do they need a listening ear? Or do they need, or do they need to vent? And I can take on, I've heard my friends' problems. They didn't ask me to go start, to go be an MMA fighter, or even to be, you know, a mediator. Maybe they were just sharing, and maybe I can just hold them and hold space for that thing instead of trying to resolve it myself. Ain't nobody asked me to roll up no sleeves and put on a
bicep. I think all that's fair, but I also just want to punctuate for the people listening who may find themselves in these positions. You did not invite that. Like, it didn't matter what you said, how you responded. Yes, I call people out too. I'm also very prepared to face the consequences. I don't say anything on social media that I wouldn't look somebody in their eye and say.
That's
I don't have Twitter fingers if I'm not going to be able to back it up in person.
Ain't no Twitter fingers over here.
But I also don't want to put people around me in a bad situation.
Yeah,
you know, it's like my mother told me that when I was little. She's like, don't put the men in this family in a bad situation.
Yes.
That means your brother, your father, your uncles. Because if I say one thing to my brother is, my brother will be ready to throw knuckles on the spot. Like, he just don't have a filter. My uncles would gladly do some jail time for somebody who hurt me. So I always had to navigate that space carefully.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that any woman is inviting you to confront her in an aggressive way that looks like it can get physical. That's out of pocket, no matter what was said to you on the front end. But I will say, when Angela and I left the hotel the next day on the airport, we had on our dark glasses, our sneakers, our hair was in ponytails. We're like, who else wants that?
They had some Vaseline on their face, their arms, they was dazzed up.
No earrings. We was ready. Okay, all right. We gotta go.
We
love y'all. We not inviting it, but also we not putting these dudes in no bad situation.
Hey, pull up, Maverick. Some situations you just gotta pull up. Welcome home.
Welcome home, y'all. Native Land Pod is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with Reason Choice Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Now, that was an interesting conversation. With all the positive things that happened during the Democratic National Convention, there was that encounter. The encounter with a person who have been listening to them for, well, have been listening to Tiffany for years, didn't like her, so he decided to tell her when he saw her on the elevator late at night, which was really not a good situation. Oh well, let's continue on.
The following is an in-focus commentary from the Black World Media Network.
America, wake up. Wake up to the results of Project 2025, the parts that have already been unleashed on an unsuspecting nation. This is the result of the MAGA agenda. Keep America separate and unequal. The evidence shows that enrollment for black students fell at two elite U.S. colleges in the first class since the Supreme Court's decision last year to strike down affirmative action in college admissions and upend the nation's academic landscape. According to the New York Times, Amherst College and Tufts University, both in Massachusetts, reported a drop in the share of black first-year students, an early sign that the high court's ruling could negatively affect racial diversity in America's more selective colleges and universities. In June 2023, the U.S. Supreme Court, driven by its conservative supermajority, ended race-conscious admissions at universities across the country. This move dealt a substantial blow to the cause of greater student diversity on campuses, which critics warned would have far-reaching effects throughout society. The data showed that the share of black students at Amherst College for the incoming freshman class decreased by 8 percentage points, from 11% last year to 3% this year. The percentage of Hispanic students dropped from 12 to 8%. Meanwhile, the rate of white students at Amherst College rose sharply, from 33 to 39%, and the percentage of Asian American students rose slightly, from 18% to 20%. Black students in Tufts University's incoming class of 2028 fell from 7.3 to 4.7%, while white students went up from 46.8 to 49.3%. The percentage of Asian American students decreased slightly from 20.3 to 19.7%. The data comes after the Massachusetts Institute of Technology announced a sharp fall in admissions from members of historically underrepresented racial and ethnic groups last week, making it the first major U.S. university to release statistics on the composition of its freshman class since the Supreme Court ruling. According to MIT's admissions department, the percentage of black students enrolled this year dropped from 15 to 5%. And the percentage of Hispanic and Latino students dropped from 16 to 11%. Admissions data for Harvard University and the University of North Carolina, the two institutions at the center of the Supreme Court ruling, have yet to be released. Donald Trump and his MAGA cohort's agenda is clear. Keep them out of top-tier line business opportunities by removing DEI. Keep them out of acquiring an equal education by denying admissions that consider America's historical inequities. But keep in place what Donald Trump and his anti-equality Supreme Court appointees would call black jobs. Keep people of color in menial jobs and recruiting conditions for poverty and the prison pipeline. We, the American people, must win this election. Then replace the clan of 19th century thinkers from the nation's top court. Reverse these egregious rulings, and put our country back on the path for the future. Project 2025 should be called Project 1820. America, this is an election we cannot afford to lose to the mean-spirited, meager-thinking MAGA crowd. No, Kamala Harris is right. We are not going back.
That was an in-focus commentary from the Black World Media Network.
So, Pastor, I'll let you explain a little bit more about what you're seeing and hearing out there on the trail and this phenomenon that we've been talking about for almost a decade now, where some evangelicals say, you know, we're not voting for a saint, we're voting for a president, somebody who will carry out what we hope he'll carry out. And in some cases, he did that, appointing those three Supreme Court justices. Are you seeing cracks in that argument now?
Yeah, Willie, actually, we've been seeing those cracks since just after Donald Trump's election in 2016. You know, he received nearly 81% of white evangelical support in 2016. But that went up from the summer of 2016, when July he was down in the 30% range with evangelicals. But then he picked Mike Pence. Mike Pence became a validator, and then he promised to put evangelicals in his cabinet, which he then did. and evangelicals rallied around Donald Trump. And almost immediately after that election, many of them regretted that decision and started to rethink their commitment to Donald Trump. And so our group, Vote Common Good, along with a lot of other groups, started to organize. And in 2018, we launched a bus tour. And that bus tour ran in 2018, 2020, 2022, and is on the road again this year. And we're talking to evangelical voters, many of who have already had their minds changed. You know, a lot of people ask us, how do you go out and change the minds of these evangelicals? And the truth of it is, we don't feel like we have to change their minds. Their minds have already started changing. I mean, to be blunt, Donald Trump is like a self-cleaning oven who does all the work for you if you want to know who he's going to be and how he's going to perform as president. And for a lot of these voters, they're just not comfortable supporting him any longer. And we know that Donald Trump may still receive 70% or 72% of evangelical support, which to someone like me seems entirely too high. But he can't win the swing states of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, even Arizona, if he doesn't receive near 80% of evangelical support from white evangelical voters.
Now, you know, Pastor, I've been in politics one way or the other the past 30 years or so. And I always found people respectful. And I will say even, and I've said it on the air too, that most Trump supporters are respectful when I'm walking through airports or going to baseball games. But a lot of times, you know, there are a few that aren't. And I always tell this story because it's so shocking, because I grew up in the Baptist church. I grew up in the Baptist church and you know, Chamblee, Georgia, in Meridian, Mississippi, mainly in Pensacola, Florida. And a lot of my friends, I'll be honest with you, that I grew up with, that I went to church with three times a week, four times a week, that I did vacation Bible school with, that I went to Ridgecrest with. I could go on and on. I do not recognize now. And I always tell this story, and Tim Alberta had basically the same story, but I was saying goodbye to my mom at her funeral, and her casket was 2 feet behind me. And somebody I grew up with in church, who knew my mom and knew my family, instead of giving me condolences, came up to me and said, "I am so concerned you're going to hell because you're not support." And I cut her off. I said, "If you're about to say, because I'm not supporting Donald Trump, I want you to know, I'm going to pray to Jesus tonight that he will forgive you and that you'll find your way, because you were so lost. You were so lost to be doing that at this moment." So I tell you that. Tim Alberta's told these stories for people that grew up in the church. I want to know, because I still don't know, what has happened to my friends. It's not about politics. This is not about issues. This is about substituting the gospel of Jesus Christ for a failed reality TV talk show host. I just don't understand it. Please explain.
Yeah, Joe, I'm an avid watcher of the show, so I feel like I've followed your tales of your religious journey, and it's very similar to other people's experiences. Look, for a lot of people, their religious identity and their political identity came as a package deal. And they think that deepening into their faith means deepening into their political identity. But just enough people, 5 to 15% of these evangelicals, especially in the swing states where it really matters, want to separate those two identities because they've seen the very same thing you've described. We've all seen it. We wonder what's happened to these people. I've been a pastor for my entire adult life, and I've seen it with people who've been part of my church. And I wonder what has happened to them. But I also know that there's a whole other group of people who've moved the other direction. They've deepened into their faith and separated their political identity from their religious identity. And those are the people that we can focus in the next 62 days to invite them to consider voting for a Democrat. Here's what you probably know to be true, Joe. A lot of these people have never met a Democrat, not a politician, maybe not even a Democratic voter. They literally don't know these people, and they've been told all kinds of lies about them. And once you introduce them to a person of faith like myself and other people who travel with us, we travel in a big bus that says faith, hope, and love, supporting democracy on election day. And that's the kind of thing that people come up and they feel confused, right? They see faith, hope, and love, and they know that's evangelical talk. But then they see supporting democracy for all on Election Day, and they think, well, that's not how we Republicans speak about this. Yeah. And some people are turned off, but so many people are saying, thank you for finally speaking out. Because when the 70% are screaming loudly, that other 30% need to also stand up. And frankly, a lot of evangelicals just get really quiet if they're not going to support Donald Trump because the things you've described.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah. I get them too. I was on Fox News the other day and my email box is full of people with the same reminders about, you know, what they consider to be my my ultimate outcome. So this is real in people's lives. And we want to do everything we can to encourage people to find what we call exceptional candidates. And we mean this, the kind of candidate that they would make an exception for. They might say, I would never vote for a Democrat, but I just might vote, you know, for that Rebecca Cook in Wisconsin. I just might vote for the candidate this time who has a D beside their name. And we think Kamala Harris has the possibility to make that big shift. And if she can pull 25 or 30% of white evangelicals in the swing states, Donald Trump not only can't win, the MAGA movement doesn't have a future.
Yeah, you know, and for those people out there that are watching that are thinking, oh, well, you know, this is only talk of left-wing, you know, pastors, radical priests, none other than Tim Keller, near the end of his life, said, I no longer call myself an evangelical because that's now more of a political identifier than an identifier of my faith.
And we begin tonight with evangelicals, a group that, in a surprising twist, is mobilizing support for the Kamala Harris presidential campaign. One group, Evangelical Christians for Kamala Harris, released a new ad highlighting that time Donald Trump told the Family Leadership Summit in Iowa that he does not ask God for forgiveness.
Have you ever asked God for forgiveness? That's a tough question. I'm not sure I have. I don't bring God into that picture. I don't.
Evangelical Christians for Kamala Harris was not on anyone's bingo card for 2024 because most people assume evangelical is synonymous with conservative. It's not. There are plenty of evangelicals who reject the mean, selfish version of the religion that follows Jesus the Christ. We call them red letter Christians. Think Bishop William Barber, friend of the show, who is, wait for it, an evangelical Christian. Think of the Christian pastors who led the civil rights movement. Think Rev Sharpton. Not all Christians are the evangelical white dudes with main character energy from The Handmaid's Tale. But this most surprising election does keep delivering surprises. Even some white evangelical Protestants are fed up with Trump. That is a group that gave him 84% of their national vote in 2020. They're not alone in tiring of his act. A separate group, Christians for Kamala, had a Zoom meeting last night that included leaders from several progressive Christian groups urging supporters to get behind Harris and Walz. Call it divine intervention? Or perhaps lots of Christians are just getting fed up with being associated with the hateful vision of Donald Trump, his Bible stunts and religious hypocrisy, and are fighting back with a counter-narrative to conservative evangelicals' overwhelming support for Trump. These groups say the conversation on faith and spirituality has been hijacked by the Christian right. And the list continues. The groups that have been hijacked by MAGA who want their identities back include unions, including the United Auto Workers, which is launching a nationwide effort to mobilize its 1 million active and retired workers to vote for VP Harris. The National Black Caucus of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Union also endorsed Vice President Harris for the presidency. As the union's national president, Union President Sean O'Brien, who spoke at the Republican National Convention last month, is now himself slamming Trump for his anti-labor comments during his bro fest with Elon Musk. Lots of Republicans are also fed up with the magification of their party, which is why Republicans for Harris online rally was attended virtually by 73,000 people, according to organizers, and where former elected Republican officials and party leaders like former Republican Congressman and January 6th Commission member Adam Kinzinger made the case for supporting the Democratic ticket. Are we in the Twilight Zone, but like the really happy, non-creepy kind? Or maybe there's nothing strange about the fact that the Harris-Walz ticket is a movement beyond just voting against Trump. It's a movement to vote for something, to vote for a change, a ticket with zero Ivy Leaguers, no one born with a silver spoon, but instead regular Americans who worked regular jobs, like Harris working her way through college with a job at McDonald's, or Walt being a teacher and football coach with no stocks and bonds in his portfolio. Folks who know what it's like to be middle class and build your life, not just inherit it. These aren't people backed mainly by billionaires and whose sole policy idea is to cut taxes even further for the super rich and corporations. And Americans are starting to really appreciate that. Harris is leading or tied with Trump in 6 of 7 key swing states, per a Wednesday report from the nonpartisan Cook Political Report. And they will roll through Pennsylvania on a bus tour on Sunday, dropping in on the crucial battleground state just days before the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Speaking of the Keystone State, a new Quinnipiac poll of Pennsylvania finds Harris leading Trump by 3 points among likely voters in a head-to-head matchup. Blue-collar voters, the battlegrounds, Christians, unions, and even Republicans are part of the incredible momentum that we're seeing right now. These people want their brands back. They're not all MAGA. And I think they want their country back, too. Joining me now is Olivia Troy, member of Republicans for Harris and former senior advisor to Vice President Mike Pence, MSNBC political analyst and former Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri, and the Reverend Al Sharpton, the aforementioned Reverend Al Sharpton, host of Politics Nation on MSNBC. I'm going to come to the folks that are remote in just a moment, but I do want to start here at the table. I was really struck by what the former governor, the former lieutenant governor of Georgia had to say. I don't know if we have that soundbite of him, you know, really just like talking about like, what do we want our kids to remember us for? You were on that call yesterday. What was it like being on a call full of Republicans, but who are supporting a Democrat?
You know what? It was amazing. I'll be honest. I mean, it was such a privilege. I moderated the conversation. And you know, it was so powerful. And I would say something that gave me hope for the first time in a long time about the Republican Party's future was the responses that were happening in the chat as this call was happening. Just hearing from Republicans across the country, one of them who said, you know, I have voted Republican my entire life. I've been voting Republican since Reagan, and I am going to vote for Kamala now. And I mean, I think to me, you know, I think what people see in Kamala Harris is traditional values that we all look to, right? I mean, it's traditional values for America. It's the values of, you know, protecting our individual freedoms, standing strong as America for America's democracy, standing strong with our allies internationally. I think those traditionally in the past, Joy, were, I would say, conservative.
What Republicans ran on.
Yes, back in the day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was incredible. And the stories and the conversation and the speeches people gave, I think, were very personal. Like, yeah. Rosario Marin, she served in the George W. Bush administration. She was the 41st U.S. Treasurer of the United States. And she spoke about what it was like, to, you know, she's a Mexican-American, mm-hmm. and what it's like to see all these ugly narratives about immigrants and minorities in the country that she sees in the Republican Party today, and how that's not the party that she identifies with.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's what's interesting about it is, you know, my buddy Michael Steele, he says this all the time, and I ask him, why are you still in the Republican Party? Like, why did you? And he always says, I'm not leaving, they should leave. Because, you know, there has been this sort of metastasis inside of the Republican Party that has eaten it up and turned it into Donald Trump. Donald Trump used to be a Democrat. Like, way back in the day, he wasn't even a Republican. He didn't like Ronald Reagan very much. And he's sort of eaten the party alive. And people who, we've talked about this offline, who they don't even like the guy. Yeah. You know, Republicans on Capitol Hill, but they've let him eat the party. You know, and it is fascinating to watch people. They're not calling themselves ex-Republicans. You guys weren't ex-Republicans. You are the core of the party saying we want our party back.
Yeah, and you know, to me, I think that's what's amazing about our country. This is an organic grassroots movement that's growing, right? Well, I would say that Republican leadership has failed us as a party because they continue to pander and fall back in line with Trump and enable him, the worst of the worst, you know, instincts of his in this party. And it's so damaging to the Republican brand. But you're seeing now a movement that is saying enough. And if you're not going to take a stand, we are.
Yeah.
And we're going to back a candidate that we believe in and support. And, you know, we'll see what the future holds for the GOP.
The country needs two healthy political parties, and it would be nice to have a normal Republican Party. We can just argue about tax rates and stuff like normal. Rev, I want to get you in on this, too, because I had to say the thing about, like, people think people don't understand what an evangelical Christian is. Again, lots of Christian pastors who a lot of Democrats who watch this network and liberals like are evangelicals. You know, I would consider you Kojic, brother, you're evangelical. So it's like people have decided evangelical equals hateful, mean, and hate immigrants. No, evangelicals actually love immigrants. They actually believe in Jesus's red letters where he said you have to support the immigrant, the aged, the widow, the orphan. That is also evangelicalism. What do you make of Christians now standing up proudly and saying, we want the kinder candidates?
Well, I think when you look at the fact that evangelicals live by Jesus talking about the Good Samaritan who stopped and helped somebody of a different race and a different situation and helped him. How do you preach the Good Samaritan and then call people that are migrant out of their name or say that people that are leading anti-Semitic marches in Charlottesville are people that are good people on both sides? So it's really incongruous to preach one thing on Sunday and then advocate politically divisiveness and other than me, I'm going to be against on Monday. You have to be consistent. And I've talked to many people that I know who are evangelicals. I grew up a Pentecostal and then a Baptist. And I've talked to people that are totally to what I would call the right in terms of interpreting theology, who has said, but I can't put this in my religious beliefs. I can't advocate somebody so divisive.
Yeah. And, you know, Claire, the other piece of it is the working class. You know, it is this interesting thing now, right, where the two Ivy Leaguers are on the Republican ticket and the ones who want to cut taxes for the super rich are on that side. And the working class folks who worked at McDonald's and as a teacher, Donald Trump recently came out with a quote saying they neither of them have ever had a real job. Is he like on something? A teacher is a real job. I hate to break it to Trump. You know, they didn't inherit $317 million from their dada and then take over his company. Trump Organization is Trump's company. I mean, it's Trump's dad's company. But look at what's happening among working class voters. So among non-college educated voters in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, according to the New York Times CNN poll, the margin that Trump had over Biden was 26 points. The margin he has over Harris among white non-college voters has dropped to only 13. He's still ahead, but it's shrinking, Claire.
Yeah, it's always been a head scratcher to me that a guy with that is really into ugly gilded toilets and shows of, you know, really bizarre, tacky wealth, and someone who has never gotten their fingernails dirty. I like Kamala. I worked my way through law. My parents couldn't afford to send me to law school. I worked as a server in restaurants and all through college and law school to make things work. Donald Trump's never done that. Donald Trump is never, he's never, ever worried about how he was going to pay the bills, except he obviously was not, didn't have any problem with screwing over working people by not paying his contractors. You know, that's the other thing.
The gremlins have gotten Claire. But I mean, I think what she was saying is, and it is absolutely true, Rev, you know this very well, is that Donald Trump was known for screwing over people who were working class, meaning workers that worked for him, contractors, subcontractors that helped him build his buildings. And then he would refuse to pay them and say, well, sue me. I'm not paying you.
This is Democracy Watch. Mark, we just got some major good news out of a crucial battleground state. Can you tell us what just happened in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, this is a major victory for voters and voting rights in what could be the deciding state in 2024. A Pennsylvania court ruled that the counties must count mail-in ballots that are timely received, so they come in on time, okay, but are missing or have incorrect dates on the outer envelope. OK, so these are ballots that are misdated or undated. The person fills out their absentee ballot. They write the date of the election on the date, or they leave it blank, or they put their birth date. But they arrive on time to the counties. There's no question that they are timely cast ballots, but don't have the dates. Those have to be counted. And that is a ruling by the Commonwealth Court of Pennsylvania under the terms and provisions of the state constitution, the Pennsylvania state constitution.
And will this be appealed? Is there a higher court? Will this be appealed to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court?
It has already been appealed by the Republicans to the High Court of Pennsylvania, the state Supreme Court. And, you know, I just want to pause there for a second to say, you know, you might imagine a different world in which both parties celebrated a ruling that said that voters would have their ballots counted rather right. than thrown in the garbage
yeah.
because they put the wrong date in, on the next.
Which is completely immaterial.
Totally immaterial, has nothing to do with anything. But, you know, you might imagine that world. And I would tell you that that world wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that long ago that it was Republicans who were relying for, particularly for their older voters, on mail-in voting. It was not that long ago that, frankly, many young voters and minority voters preferred to vote in person, particularly in person early. Why we always used to talk about souls to the polls so much, right? That was early in-person voting. And it was Republicans who would have cheered this, but yeah. not anymore. In the world of Donald Trump, the Republican Party hates this ruling, and so they have already appealed this and are seeking review in the High Court of Pennsylvania, the state Supreme Court.
How many votes is this going to impact this year?
Well, it's time to find a new apartment on Zillow. Huh, these are all great. And this one's close to Mom. I can finally go to Sunday dinners again. Or maybe we could even do them here.
Zillions of apartments, one way home. Zillow Rentals.
This is a big deal because you're talking about at least 10,000, more likely tens of thousands of ballots that will be affected.
In a state, by the way, that was decided unto itself by tens of thousands of votes.
That's exactly right. I mean, this very much could be the margin of victory or mm-hmm. defeat for not just Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, but also in the competitive Senate race between Bob Casey and McCormick or some of the swing House races. There are at least three very competitive House races that we focus on there when we talk about control of the House. So this is a huge ruling for voters in Pennsylvania. It is a huge ruling for voting rights, but it is also a huge ruling when it comes to the outcome of the 2024 elections. Because, you know, I said that you could imagine a different world. Well, we can stop imagining. These ballots are going to be disproportionately young. They're going to be disproportionately minority voters. And they're going to be overwhelmingly Democrats of all stripes.
And that was my next question, is what groups of people are most likely to have their ballots rejected for being outdated or misstated? But the reality is that Republicans know full well, and this is why they're so hostile to these kind of votes. They know full well that the people actually taking advantage of early voting, of mail voting, are not their own voters, because they've been groomed, their own voters, to only go and vote on election day, because Donald Trump keeps perpetuating this idea that any early voting, any mail voting, is just rife with fraud.
Right. And so we know a couple of things. The first is, as you say, as an overall pool, we know mail-in voting in Pennsylvania and virtually everywhere in the country right now is used more often by Democrats. I shouldn't say advantage, because it doesn't advantage one part or the other, but it's more often used by Democrats
right.
because of the lies that Donald Trump has been spreading about it. But we also know something else, which is that within the pool of rejected mail-in ballots, okay, now we're just taking the subset of rejected mail-in ballots, we know that those are disproportionately young versus old, and black and Hispanic versus white. So we know that the pool of rejected ballots are going to skew more in the direction of minority voters and young voters. And for people who are curious why that is, it actually hits young voters even more harder than it does minority voters, because young voters tend to have less reliable mail service, and young voters have less history in filling out these ballot envelopes. So they are more likely to put the wrong date. Young voters are less likely to see something like dating their signature as super important. They have not grown up in a world in which signatures are the thing that right. they use to validate their most important documents, and so signatures and dates next to signature tend to play a less important role.
Now, I know Republicans are going to point to this and try to claim that certain people leaving this information off of the ballots is somehow disqualifying. For posterity here, does putting the date actually matter? Do election officials even use the date on the outside envelope to determine if a ballot was sent in on time?
They absolutely do not. Period. Full stop. But I'm glad you asked the question, because I am getting a lot of hate. Shocker.
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of hate by email or on social media by Republicans and election deniers who are saying, oh, Mark Elias doesn't care what the date is of these ballots. These ballots could come in a week or 3 weeks after Election Day. They can be voted after Election Day and it doesn't matter. And that is either because they are intentionally misrepresenting the truth, or they have been lied to so often by Donald Trump that they don't understand it. These ballots have been timely received, okay? The ballots we're talking about in Pennsylvania, they have come in before or on Election Day. There is no, these are not ballots that possibly could have been voted after Election Day. They have been received already. So the issue with the date is not the date upon which they were voted. The only dating issue here is the date on the outer envelope filled in by the voter. So the date is doing literally no work because the election officials in the counties, they are date stamping when the counties receive the ballots with an official date stamp. So there's no question that these ballots were voted on time.
So these fields are only there specifically so that if you mess up, it gives Republicans a predicate to then try to throw them away. They are there as a trap, baby, basically, like a booby trap to confuse people or to have them do something wrong so that that can be used as justification to then undermine these ballots.
Yes. Look, a lot of these traps go back to a different era, decades ago, when people were, in fact, signing things and dating next to it. I'm sure everyone's filled out a form where you have to put your signature and date something. And you may ask yourself, why the hell do we still have to do that since most of these documents are now, like, put in, you know, either DocuSign or Adobe Acrobat or something that locks an electronic date that is unchangeable. And it's just because we have not caught up in a lot of our antiquated forms with the new realities. And that's the situation here. The counties know when they receive these things. There may be a postmark from the Postal Service, but even if there's a postmark from the Postal Service, they are still hard date stamping them when they are received by the counties. So the dating here is just an anachronism from another era. It is doing no work, and all it is doing is disenfranchising voters. But the question, Brian, is why are Republicans looking for excuses to throw out votes? Because that's the reality of where we are. In state after state, whether it's Pennsylvania or someplace else, we talk about this every week. Republicans have another scheme to throw out otherwise lawful votes.
I do want to talk about your firm's work in the federal case that's similar to this one. But before we do, just a note for everybody watching, if you want to support the invaluable work that Mark and his team are doing in the courts, which is ground zero in the fight to protect democracy right now, a small step that we can all take is signing up for Democracy Docket. It's the news outlet Mark founded to focus on everything voting in elections. It's a resource I use on a daily basis. It's super helpful. So I'll put the link right here on the screen and also in the post description of this video. So Mark, can you talk about the lawsuit that your firm is working on in the federal courts that's similar to this one in PA?
Yeah, so there have been several lawsuits, as people probably know, on this issue or related issues that have percolated up and down the various courts around Pennsylvania. One of those cases is a case, as you mentioned, my law firm is involved in for parts of the Democratic Party in federal court that say that these requirements violate the U.S. federal constitution. This is in state court saying it violates the state constitution. I believe it violates both the state and federal constitution because however you look at it, you're potentially disenfranchising, or not potentially, you are in fact disenfranchising people. They are U.S. citizens. They are properly registered. They are eligible to vote. They haven't cast another ballot. There is nothing wrong with the ballot inside the envelope. It is perfectly cast. And yet they are seeing their ballots thrown in the trash. They are suffering the indignity of being disenfranchised because of the antiquated dating form on the outer envelope. And so whether it's this case in state court or the federal court case, these courts need to protect these voters.
Right. And I know that we don't think of it this way, but this is just a modern version of a poll tax or having to choose how many jelly beans are in a jar. I mean, this is not much different because there is no prohibition in the Constitution to voting if you haven't properly dated the outside envelope. I mean, this is just some new obstacle that they've created to prevent people from voting.
There's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that says you have to know the date in order to vote.
Right.
Right. And that, and no less, not only know the date, but interpret the form where it where there's a place for a date. Interpret it that what they mean is the date you signed, as opposed to the date of the election, as opposed to your birth date, which are, by the way, other dates that that Republicans in other states, you know, the birth date, some places they do want you to have your birth date. So you know, there is this, it should, there is nothing in the right to vote that is conditioned on being able to interpret this form and knowing the date. You should be allowed to vote even if you don't know what day the date is.
Thank you for listening.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
Hello, you're listening to Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. I'm your host, Arshan Das, with my co-host,
Kate Smiggy.
And today we're going to be interviewing Max Gonzalez, also known as Gems.
Hi.
Max is a graffiti artist and muralist in Pittsburgh. He has a pretty interesting story. So I guess we'll let him lead it off. Tell us how you got into graffiti.
Yeah, so I am a full-time muralist, but I always make the distinction to say that I'm like first and foremost a graffiti writer. So like I have a very like graffiti, like traditional hip-hop lettering background. I'm originally from Southwest Side Chicago. I grew up painting there and just like seeing like graffiti everywhere I was from, because the neighborhood I'm from is Pilsen, and it's just like this very historic Chicano community that's just covered in graffiti. So I just naturally saw it everywhere I was. So even like as far as like starting to draw graffiti, like I don't even know how old I was, because I just was mimicking what I saw and what I thought graffiti was. I very much so have always had graffiti in my life. I didn't really start to like try to actually paint and get a name in graffiti until I was about like 15. I think like the first time I used spray paint though, I was like 13, just coming from like a construction background and doing vandal type things with my dad and my brother. And yeah, from there, around like later in high school is when I started to actually really try to push it more, try to do pieces and things. But it really was when I moved to Pittsburgh for college and didn't have like parental control and kind of had free reign that I really, really started to push graffiti. So that was like age 18. I started writing Gems. Before that, I was writing all kinds of other things, but Gems is like really what stuck out to me. And just like being in a university format in a city that was unfamiliar to me and just kind of hating the college format I was in, I kind of didn't like to hang around a lot. So every night I would just go paint on things and put my name everywhere. So in a way, like me having graffiti was an access to like my upbringing to Chicago and kind of like that culture that I was brought up with. So being able to like export that to Pittsburgh and like pull from that inspiration. But yeah, so the whole time through college, I was not doing graffiti as my art form for Carnegie Mellon, but it was still always there.
Yeah, so you studied at Carnegie Mellon, like we are current Carnegie Mellon students. A lot of times when you're around campus, you hear people talking about how the environment here is somewhat depressing or suffocating. Everyone has their own opinions on that, but how do you think the environment of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon contributed to your art?
Yeah, if anything, it was kind of good that I had such a distaste for CMU, just because it forced me to seek like the actual Pittsburgh communities outside of the campus areas. Just because, I don't know, like coming from where I'm from, like I'm not poor or anything, but I come from a working class family and like worked construction my whole life. So coming here and like even during school, like working two different jobs, like working at a restaurant and then like working construction during the summers, like I just couldn't really culturally attach myself to a lot of the other people here, where I was just seeing people who literally princes and princesses, and I was just kind of like, oh my god, and like children of like CEOs, and it just like was very difficult for me to attach myself to that, especially coming from like Chicago and kind of loving the more city nitty-gritty side of things. But yeah, so that did push me to eventually start looking into seeing the rest of the East End. So really I've always like prided myself on like being very attached to the East End of Pittsburgh. So like East Liberty, Bloomfield, Garfield. From there, finding places like Time Bomb Shop, which used to be on Highland Ave, which is like a historic hip hop graffiti store, and Daily Bread, and finding all those friends there. Thank you to CMU for pushing me away.